Hey folks, Ben Greenfield here. What you're about to hear is a special bonus call that was done with Kevin Koskela, who runs TriSwim Secrets. This call is full of triathlon training and nutrition gold from myself and Kerry Sullivan. Now, during this call, you're going to hear some special offers that may have expired by the time you listen to this call. However, if you email me, rockstar@rockstartriathlete.com, I can hook you up with the same type of specials that you hear in this call, no matter when you hear it. So that's rockstar@rockstartriathlete.com. And now let's get on to the good stuff.
Welcome to the TriSwim Secrets bonus exclusive call with Ironman coaches Ben Greenfield and Kerry Sullivan. And I think most of you guys know who these guys are. And a lot of the members, actually a lot of my members came over from your site. So just give you a quick intro here and then we'll get going. Ben is recognized as one of the top fitness, triathlon, and nutrition and metabolism experts in the nation. And he coaches and trains individuals for weight loss, lean muscle gain, holistic wellness, and sports performance. And that's in Spokane, Washington, and Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, as well as all over the world on his Pacific Elite Fitness. He's also himself a competitive Ironman triathlete and just returned from Thailand, where he raced the Asia Pacific 70.3. And Kerry Sullivan is the founder and head coach of Tri Euphoria. And today, Kerry is a personal trainer and triathlon coach. He is proficient in training using heart rate and power meters. He is also an accomplished triathlete himself, who has represented the USA at age group worlds in both triathlon and aquathlon. And he specializes in racing Olympic distance races and coached triathletes from all the way from beginners to the world championship level. And together, Ben and Kerry run the triathlon training website at Rockstar Triathlete, which teaches beginner triathletes how to get started in triathlon and teaches fast triathletes how to get faster in triathlon. And that's the website is getrockstartri.com. Guys, welcome to the call.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ben.
That was a good introduction, but you forgot to say that I could beat Kerry in a triathlon.
Is that true? Are we going to have a face-to-face
I don't talk here, back, man. That's not the way I operate.
The show down has actually not yet happened, but it will someday.
Yeah. Have you guys raced against each other yet?
No, that's what I'm saying. We haven't raced against each other yet.
Oh, okay.
We'll see.
Yeah. The showdown. So let's talk about the Rockstar Academy just real quickly here. You guys are opening it up tomorrow, and there's a special going on?
Well, the Rockstar Triathlete Academy has been going strong for a year. So we've got, like, we have well over 400 pages of videos, and we lost track of how many hours worth of audio we have in there. All the training plans, you know, all that jazz has been in there for a year, getting developed, getting tweaked, getting better. And we added so much content that about halfway through the year, because we were working on it so much, we had to up the price to $67 a month. And we decided to bring that back down as kind of a little Christmas special, end of the season special for people who want to start their 2011 season off with a bang. So it's basically a dollar right now to get in for 14 days to go check everything out. And then rather than 67 for the tuition for the academy, it's 37. So basically much, much better deal for folks. And we're just kind of keeping that open for basically 2 weeks till January 1st.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great deal. It's a good time of year to start doing that, I think, you know, late December. I mean, all the races start in the spring, so that's like perfect timing.
Yeah, exactly. And we basically just want to give people the right start to the new year, get them hooked up with Kerry and I as their coaches, get them all the free training plans, access to the forum where you've got the 24/7 access to us, and, just make that available at a really, really good deal.
Cool. So, and do you mind just going over really quickly what's in the academy?
Yeah, go ahead, Kerry.
What's inside the academy, you asked?
Yeah, just a kind of a brief overview of what people get.
Yeah, sure, no problem. So Like Ben says, you get some free training plans, and we got all distances in there from sprint all the way up to Ironman. You're going to get video content. You're going to get article content. You're going to get Q&A sessions, like calls like we're having right now with Ben and I answering questions. But then we also have all kinds of other experts come on and do Q&A. We believe it's good to, you know, get all kinds of different perspectives in there. We actually got a doctor in there, and Ben, we just interviewed the guy last night. I'm blanking. Dr. John
yep.
Post.
Yep.
He's working with us now, and so you know, he's really good at answering a lot more of the technical medical questions in there for us. You know, we've got all kinds of other stuff in there. We've got some video analysis type stuff that people can do to send in their videos. And you know, basically too, we're very open to suggestions, and we're always you know, listening to our people and trying to give them what they want. So that's basically
cool.
It in a nutshell.
And yeah. we give all new members a free puppy. Send it in the mail.
No,
but actually, when you do join, we do have a ton of bonuses, like a ton of
yeah.
Like when you join for $1, you've got access. And I know some people have done this, kind of join and quit, but you get access to like $300 to $400 of just pure bonuses, you know, triathlon audios and books and stuff like that. So plus a ton of discounts. We've gone to triathlon industries or industry businesses and gotten huge discounts from them and then put them up in the academy. So way better
yeah.
discounts than people typically get through like triathlon clubs and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sounds, you know, I'm not a member, but it does sound like a great deal. I mean, and especially Ben, I listen to your podcast when I can, and you give people their money's worth, even though it's free. If that's anything like your podcast, then yeah, I think it would be a sweet deal.
It's like my podcast, but it's better because it's live. The Q&A is, and also it'd be like listening to my podcast and then also getting on a forum and being able to ask me all the questions there too. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, we had we have some questions from some of the TriSwim Secrets members, and I sent you guys an article that somebody sent me today, and it's I thought it was an interesting topic, and I thought we'd start out right and get into the meat of it. And it's about stroke counting. So Kelsey says, for the past month or two, I've been working on my stroke count. It's pitifully high, and I can only lower it by doing the catch-up drill. But as soon as I swim any length of time, it goes back up. I found an article on stroke counting. I'd get your opinion. I do have short arms, and I can't sustain a low stroke count over a 400-meter swim. So I thought we'd just kind of like chat about this because it's a topic that I think there's a lot of different takes on it, and it, you know, getting to the bottom of this would be probably helpful for a lot of people because for years it's been, you know, strokes is everything for swimming, especially for distance swimming, and now these people it's Swim Smooth, who I like, I think they're pretty solid. They're saying don't count strokes, it could mess you up. I don't want to read the whole article, it'll take too long, but the basic gist of it is that there's been, you know, plenty of tests done where people have counted strokes and then, like, over the course of 400 meters, their stroke count just keeps going up. You know, they may start out pretty low and then it just keeps going up, and it always comes down to they just get fatigued and then the stroke count goes out the window. So what's the point of counting strokes? Because you're just going to get slower and stroke count goes up. Yeah, what do you guys think of this whole idea?
Terry's a lot faster swimmer than I am, I think. I don't know. I think just from the split. So I'll let Kerry tackle this first. Go ahead, Kerry.
Okay.
Well, one of the first things is she said she was shorter, right?
Yeah, short arm.
Yeah, in my opinion, and especially with the shorter swimmers, stroke count is very tough for them to do because, again, you know, they got shorter arms, and they've also got a lot of other, like, hydrodynamic things going on. And, you know, it's just tougher to pull something that's shorter through the water versus something that's kind of like long and thin through the water. If you know, look at top race boats and things like that, they're kind of long and thin, and they can haul right through the water versus, you know, kind of like a barge. So there's some other things going on there too. But, yeah, in general, what you find is that with shorter guys, it doesn't really correlate to really lengthen the stroke out. And there's probably a lot of different reasons, like I said, just the shape of their body and everything else. But one of the most effective ways that I found that you can kind of figure out what your ideal stroke rate is, because, again, I think that can – vary from person to person too, depending on their flexibility of their shoulders, of their elbows or whatever it is. So there's only so far that some people are going to be able to reach and things. So there's a lot of different ways and things that can happen with people. You know, their arm lengths are all going to be different too. But
yeah,
basically what you can do is you can go to a pool and you can have someone clock you with your stroke rate, just doing a regular stroke, and just do 100 meters, just like nice and steady at a good effort. And then what you can do from there is you can take actually like a metronome or like a metronome, and it's one of those things that you can stick in your goggle cap, and it'll just kind of beep, and it'll get you on a steady stroke count.
That's the Finesse product?
Yeah, Finesse. I think there's a few companies that make them, but yeah. Finesse definitely has one, and it's just kind of beep and get you on target there. And what you can do from there is you can experiment to see where the athlete is going to be most efficient. So, you know, they might have, you know, you might increase the stroke rate and they might be a lot faster, but, you know, at the same time, it might really fatigue them. So you can basically, there's three things you want to have to do this. You want to figure out A, what they're doing, their 100 time in, B, what the stroke rate is, and then C, what the perceived effort is, like on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being super low, 10 being super hard. And basically, you can find the sweet spot between the times, the stroke rate, and the effort of roughly where they should be. But, you know, again, especially in triathlon, you know, your stroke rate is going to switch a lot within a race too, because, you know, your paces might change during the race, you know, waves, chop, you know, if it's really choppy, a lot of the time your stroke rate kind of, it may increase or may decrease. It kind of depends. And in general, the guys that I find that have the really slow stroke rates are guys that are pretty elite swimmers, like the top of the top, and they're really big guys too. You know, I've swam with some guys that, you know, they like 8 or 9 strokes across 25 meters, you know, and they're just beasts though in the pool, and they've just kind of developed like that. So I think it pretty much depends on the person. I think definitely with smaller people, I think their stroke rate is definitely going to be on the higher side, but that kind of little drill that I was talking about there is a good way that you can kind of hone that in for people.
Just to comment on that real quick. It sounds like kind of like the free golf, where you're not just counting strokes, but you're also keeping track of your time. So you're in there, you're adding them together. Yeah.
Yeah, you can throw the perceived effort type thing in there too. And
yeah, and if you don't have a swimming metronome, the swim golf works well. But I agree with Terry that if you can grab a metronome or metronome, it gives you a lot more data. And really, you don't even need somebody to watch you or count your strokes, because what you can do is you can set the metronome at, say, you know, like a low number, like 60, swim a 50 or 100 meter repeat at 60 and check your time, and then do it again at 65 and again at 70, and just work your way up until you find that sweet spot between your time, your perceived exertion, which you obviously don't want to be too difficult if you're doing this for, say, like a, you know, 1500 plus meters, and then also your stroke count on the metronome, and then you can practice based on that. And stroke count might even differ depending on the distance of the race that you're doing. I know mine's a lot higher in like a sprint triathlon than it is in say an Ironman. Kerry answered that question pretty thoroughly, but I just want to throw in there that I really think stroke count, and specifically lowering stroke count, is very overrated and tends to slow people down, especially for open water swimming, more than it speeds them up. Because they're overgliding, they're hitting a dead spot, a loss of velocity in the swim speed at the end of each glide, versus maintaining higher turnover and higher speed. If you go and just like go to YouTube and start to watch some races, like some clips of triathlons, especially if you watch some of the ITU events, or even if you just like watch the swim start or the swim finish or even the middle swim portions of like the Ironman NBC footage that's on this Saturday. Do some stroke counts if you can. Even if you can grab somebody for like 10 seconds and multiply by 6 or 15 and multiply by 4, you're going to find those counts are super high compared to what most people are learning to swim with in a typical like master swim or even like a triathlon club swim at their pool. And the reason for that is that most of the good swimmers in triathlon know that to maintain speed in the open water and to be able to react to what the rest of the group is doing, you need a higher stroke count, almost similar to the reason that, you need a higher cadence while cycling. So the last thing that comes to mind for me is that you mentioned Swim Smooth. They have a pretty cool chart on their website. I don't know what the URL is, but you could probably Google like Swim Smooth stroke chart. And it basically, based on the time that you're shooting for your 100-meter time, and your height gives you a sweet spot in terms of cadence that's probably going to work well for you. And I've found that to be fairly accurate with myself and my athletes.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And then they have the they have that little swimmer guy, too, that kind of shows you a stroke, which I think is pretty good, but it can also kind of throw people off because they're trying to be perfect and get it exactly like that guy.
Yeah, and I think, like, for me, that's impractical because, like, I have to practice in the pool, and I can't take that little guy and bring him with me to the pool until somebody develops a waterproof holographic, like, swim 3D eyewear that you can wear to watch movies while you're swimming.
That's a good idea.
There you go. Well, in the end of the day, too, like, what happens a lot of the time is you think you're doing one thing, but until you actually see yourself doing it, like with video or have someone critiquing you, you know, you're usually doing something totally different, you know? You can never really tell anyway, so.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think we nailed that one. I think we've got it all figured out. That is one that people get obsessed with stroke count, just like they get obsessed with time and everything else, but I try to get them away from that. I get this question a lot. It's, how many strokes should I take? And what is Michael Phelps taking? What do you take? And it's like, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, forget it.
Yeah, just that's one thing you explain to people, too. They're like, well, Michael Phelps does this. Well, you're not Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps does some stuff with the stroke that a lot, like, most people aren't going to get away with. So,
Michael Phelps, he's like, what, 6'5", 6'6"?
He's actually one of the shorter U.S. swimmers right now. I think he's 6'2", 6'3".
Oh, okay. Either way, his inseam is like 32. I mean, he's got an incredibly huge torso, super short legs. Not many people are built like that.
Yeah. Okay, I've got another one here from Greg Lynch, and he says, and this is directed to, I guess it's directed to Ben. So he says, I'm training for my first Ironman this June. I bought Ben Greenfield's Triathlon Dominator program and completed the lactate threshold test for the bike and run. My lactate threshold for the bike was 165 BPM and 171 BPM for the run. When I'm racing my first Ironman, what would my best average heart rate for the bike and run be? And is there a heart rate that I would not want to exceed at all costs?
Yeah. First of all, dude, finish going through the program because I tell you in the program. but basically, it's pretty straightforward. When I was running a physiology lab, which I did for 3.5 years, one of the things that we did was we'd test somebody via like calorimetry testing, and what we'd look at was basically a snapshot of their fat burning and carbohydrate burning from rest all the way up to maximum all-out pace. So at some point along that curve, you reach your point of maximum fat utilization. At some point along that curve, you reach your lactate threshold, which were those 165 and 171 numbers that he was mentioning. And then at the end of that curve, you reach your VO2 max and your maximum heart rate. So what we'd find was that consistently that fat oxidation, that maximum rate of fat utilization occurred at about lactate threshold minus 15 to 20 beats. And this agrees very well with what a lot of aerobic coaches, kind of some old school aerobic coaches like Phil Maffetone and Mark Allen, have preached for a very long time, and that's that you're going to find peak aerobic efficiency at that field-tested anaerobic threshold heart rate minus 20 beats. Now, the difference between my philosophy of training and their philosophy of training is that they say, okay, therefore do most of your training at that lactate threshold minus 20 beats rate. And the problem is that for somebody with limited number of hours to train, that simply requires too much time spent doing that kind of long, slow distance training. So what I do instead is for example, in that program, the Triathlon Dominator program, I give people a ton of intervals and over speed work, which has been shown in research to achieve higher metabolic efficiency and economy at even lower rates of exertion. And then when we actually get to the race, we say, okay, now you're going to do your threshold minus 15 to 20 beats. And there's a few chances to practice that in some sessions leading up to the race. But ultimately, the answer to the question is take your results from those tests, subtract 15 to 20 beats, and that's your aerobic threshold for the bike and the run.
Yeah, okay. That's roughly like a zone three, right, Ben?
That's gonna basically, like, if you're training with heart rate, it's going to be right around in the zone two to zone three. If you're training with power, you're looking at right around a little over 50% up to a little under 65% of your power. So it comes out to something like 52 to 63% of maximum power.
Okay. Cool. So what you're recommending is sort of like, because they had the, what was their thing? The 180 formula, 180 minus your age.
Well, for maximum heart rate, you mean?
Yeah, that was what the Maffetone Mark Allen formula was. It was 180 minus.
I don't remember what their maximum heart rate formula was, but basically they're saying however you determine what your lactate threshold heart rate is, your aerobic heart rate's going to be something right around 20 beats underneath that.
Yeah.
So the way that you get to lactate threshold heart rate, you can go test in a lab or do a field test or extrapolate it from your maximum heart rate or whatever. But either way, you're still looking at that aerobic heart rate being X number of beats under your LT or your AT.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, Kelsey's got another question, actually, and this came in on our Q&A here. Okay. She says, in a recent podcast of yours, I think she's actually addressing Ben on this. In a recent podcast of yours, you mentioned you were doing an article on the best time for triathletes to take different supplements. Can I find this online somewhere? Thanks. You are like a sports encyclopedia.
Yes. Yes, that was a video. I went into my kitchen and I took all the supplements out of my cupboard and my refrigerator, and I put them all out on my counter. Well, my wife looked at me, and I know she was thinking or hoping that I was going to be putting them all away. And I took out a video camera and recorded myself talking about when I take each of those and why I take them when I take them. And that video will be available when the article is released in Lava Magazine, not this current issue, but the next issue of Lava Magazine. It'll also be released on the Lava Magazine website and on the Rockstar Triathlete Academy website. But since she's listening into this call, the gist of it, the overview of it, is that you're generally going to want to take your multivitamins with meals, unless your multivitamin contains tons of vitamin B12, or unless you're like taking a separate vitamin B12 supplement, in which case you want to take your vitamin B12 on an empty stomach. The reason that I make that clarification is a ton of energy drinks are based on having high doses of vitamin B12. Those are going to be better if you take them on an empty stomach. You're going to feel a lot more like before a race if you take it 30 minutes before the race versus taking it with race morning breakfast. For supplements that have fat in them, like vitamin D or like omega-3 fatty acids, those are also going to best be absorbed with meals. For high-fiber supplements, you're looking at those being something that you don't want to take with a fat-based supplement. So if you're taking vitamin D or you're taking fish oils, fiber will diminish the absorption of the fat. So let's say you're taking like a green supplement or like a high-fiber, you know, psyllium seed or something. Take that at a different time of day than you take your fish oil or your vitamin D. What else was in there? Antioxidants. If you're taking like a high-dose antioxidant supplement, what that can do is shut down your body's ability to actually create its own antioxidants against free radicals produced during exercise. So don't overuse it. Preferably use it like in the midday when you've done a hard workout or you know you have a hard workout coming up, and don't use it like every day when you're just doing easy workouts and you're really not tearing down the body too much. And definitely use it like before a race because it'll really help stave off fatigue before a race.
That's why I've heard that bodybuilders kind of stay away from antioxidants.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. But at the same time, you know, bodybuilders, some of them could use a lot more antioxidants because if you've ever seen a bodybuilder up close, there's some serious premature aging going on in that population.
Oh, yeah.
The probiotics would be empty stomach. So take your probiotics like before bed or early in the morning. And then the last one would be minerals. Minerals like magnesium and calcium, again, you'd want to take those on an empty stomach as well, and don't take anything like that with an iron supplement. So if you're like a woman and you're taking an iron supplement due to blood loss, then make sure that you're not taking iron at the same time that you're taking your magnesium or your calcium or anything like that. So I'd recommend magnesium and calcium, since they're going to help you get to sleep anyways and improve sleep quality. Take something like that on an empty stomach before bed. So I went into a little bit more detail in the video, but that was the gist of it.
The human encyclopedia or sports encyclopedia. I think she's right.
There you go.
Although we don't use encyclopedias anymore. I guess it would be like the Google of
Wikipedia.
Yeah, the Wikipedia, right.
Yeah, the wiki.
Cool. Awesome. So, Carrie, I had a question for you.
Sure.
A series of articles on common mistakes triathletes make, which I thought was really good. Can you kind of just go over like your top three you get as a coach, the top three common mistakes that you see triathletes making?
Yeah, there's quite a few. I'd say one of the big ones I've been running into a lot is when they miss workouts, they try to stack on, stack them on top of each other. So, for instance, if they missed a run or two, they might take, one run might be 30 minutes, and the next run they're supposed to do might be 40 minutes, and then they're like, okay, I'll just do a 70-minute run right now. And, when you stack up workouts like that on top of each other and try to build all the volume into one day, that can often be a good way to break yourself down. So that is one thing. Number two would say is just basically not doing enough on technique. And really, I'm big on drilling people. I mean, I make people do run drills and swim drills and bike drills until they're blue. I have them do them every day, or basically anytime they go out and do a session, they're doing drills in the beginning and sometimes in the end as well. I don't think you can drill enough. I think technique is huge, and it's something I do every day too in my training. And the more efficient you are, the more that helps. And especially like in swimming, as we all know, that it's so technique driven that just honing in on drills that work, that are going to really work specifically for you as well on specific areas where you are individually weak. It's a big help, definitely. And then number three, I think number three for me right now would just be not enough people have fun with it. I think people can really lose focus on why they're doing it sometimes and not having fun. They can get really driven and I understand with Ironman, the guys that coach, they've got one big event they're training for, and like they get pretty grumpy in the process and start getting stressed out. And I think it's just important. Everyone's different, everything like that. But for me, the guys that coach, I try to emphasize that they have fun with it, because, at the end of the day, I think that we all like to have fun. So
yeah, I think
keeping it fun is huge.
I think that's a good. Actually, I had that in my notes to bring up. What do you, as far as your coaching or competing, what's the most fun? What's the funnest thing about triathlon?
Oh man, for me it's a lot of different things, but I'd say winning is definitely very fun. I love winning. But being outside in good weather, I'm fortunate. I live in Florida, so I mean, pretty much get good weather every single day is the other thing. And, being healthy and in shape, that's awesome. It does a lot for you. There's a great book that Ben actually told me about that you guys can all read about too, called Spark. And it basically just talks about all the benefits that, exercise has for you. Not for your body and your mind and everything. So, it helps you to stay good, that fun and healthy that way too.
And actually the interesting part about that book was that there's actually increased neural activity of the brain with endurance exercise compared to resistance training. So endurance athletes in particular are smarter.
Yeah, I was actually also reading another book.
That's why the cross-country team will beat the football team hands down any day when you put it in the class.
That's true. Oh, yeah. I don't know where swimming falls in that, but it's probably it's not as high as cross-country for sure.
Yeah. No, the cross-country guys, I used to train with those guys all the time in college when I was doing they're big computer geeks. But anyway, there's a book I was reading recently too called Power Versus Force, and it's actually talking about different levels of consciousness with people. And they're saying that endurance athletes are usually on a higher level of consciousness as well. because they just have to dig deeper into themselves and things. So,
And then you always ask yourself, though, what came first, the chicken or the egg? You know, are we that way because we're endurance athletes, or were we born with a certain level of mental drive or a certain brain type that drew us to endurance sports?
Ben, I read your one of your race reports on. Actually, I was reading about your Thailand experience, and then also your the last Kona race you did. Some of that heat and humidity that you were dealing with, I found that was that must have been really brutal. I was wondering how that went, and what you learned from racing in those in both those atmospheres.
Well, it's always blown out of proportion for me because I train in a cold climate, so it always hits me just a little bit harder, at least it seems like it does. But the biggest things I learned, one of the biggest things I learned was recently in Thailand, which was actually a lot more humid than Hawaii, was that the amount lost, especially on the bike, can really come back to bite you because in that humid weather, you know, you sweat, but you don't get a lot of that evaporative cooling taking place on a very efficient level. So your body just keeps on sweating, and your water losses become very significant. So what happens is your body loses its ability to engage in core cooling, and you get into the run, and you last for a little while, and then you get basically what happens to me is you just start to pop as the thermometer redlines. And so in especially humid conditions, you have to extrapolate your water intake a lot higher than what you would normally, even if you're acclimated, you know, because I'd been in Thailand 2 weeks at that point by the time I raced, and I was well acclimated, but the water loss was just over and above what I'd actually planned for, even in my training, because I was doing a lot of my training up here in the dry heat. It's very difficult to simulate humid conditions, even with the humidifier set up underneath your indoor trainer. Still, a lot of that just gets dispersed by the motion of the wheel and a big room. So humidity was a big, big thing. And then Kona, just little things, specifically with nutrition. I got a flat tire in that race. And what I do and what I preach to all my athletes is you get out of transition in an Ironman, you set your clock at zero, and you pay attention to that bike fueling clock, and you're a slave to it. So, you know, basically at the 20, the 40, and the 60-minute mark, you're taking in X number of calories so that you, at the end of each hour, have X number of calories per hour. And you're able to do the math in your head and know exactly how much you've taken in. Well, I set my clock at zero, and literally, I think it was at the 27-minute mark that I flatted. So while I'm changing the flat and kind of getting back on my bike, getting my head back in the game, totally just lost connection with that fueling clock. And ended up by the end of the bike ride under fueling by about 100 calories per hour. So I went into the run with about a 600 calorie deficiency and just had to make that up early in the run, and it slowed me down. So a lesson learned from that was if something happens during the race, don't let it throw off your fueling clock, especially in Ironman, or it can come back to bite you. So, you know, what I should have done is started my fueling clock back up at zero after I finished with the tire and gotten back into the math ASAP after that.
Yeah. And they, where was it that you were drinking Cokes? Was that at the Kona?
Yeah. There's actually an interesting recent study that came out on fructose versus glucose and the ability to lower rating of perceived exertion and increase blood glucose levels a lot faster. And maybe that's what kind of drew me to the Coke was just seeing that as one of the sweetest things on the table. But, you know, when you got to bring yourself up from a calorie deficit fast, you know, something with a fructose base in it is the best way to go. So I could have done the power bar like glucose or the maltodextrin fructose blends, but, you know, at that point, looking at a cup of Coke versus looking at slamming like 5 to 6 gels, the Coke looks a lot better.
Yeah, totally. And then as far as Thailand, was that like the most humidity you've had to deal with?
That I can remember, yeah. I mean, I've raced in Thailand before, but never anything of that distance.
So do you have any tips on, I guess you could just, like, move to Florida, right, Gary? You just train in the humidity. I mean, as far as acclimating yourself to that kind of environment. Because I know a lot of the races are in these, you know, pretty humid places, and I'm always blown away because I've always lived in the California coast where it's just, you know, dry as a desert.
Well, look at where the world champions of Ironman, a lot of the best triathletes in the world train, like 2 hours from where I raced over in Krabi, Thailand. That's where Team TVB is set up. And one of the most humid spots on the planet to train, and there's a reason that they do so well in Hawaii, that group of athletes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of other physiological adaptions, but there's quite there's some studies out there that basically show that, you know, training in the heat and humidity, you do get some extra adaptions that you don't necessarily get in cooler climates too. So, you know, in general, I think the heat is the way to go, and I love it too.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I can deal with the heat. The cold is what kills me.
Yeah.
You know, I have another question I want to ask you guys. So if you could just give one tip or one piece of advice with each discipline, so swim, bike, run, on how to get faster, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a good one. Let's see. With the swim, I'd say in general with triathletes, I'd say the first thing I would tell them to do is develop a really good catch in the front quadrant of your stroke. And do you want to – Ben, go next on that, or should I just go right into the bike and the run?
Yeah, you can go right into it. That's cool.
Okay. The bike, I would say get a power tap some kind of power meter and learn how to use it, or get a coach to help you know how to use it. And on the run, technique. Tons of drills, work on your technique over and over and over again.
As far as running goes, what's the biggest challenge that people have to overcome?
I'd say with triathletes, it's usually just learning how to actually run like a runner. You know, most people just go out there and they just run, and there's, you know, to be good at running just like swimming, there's tons of technique in it. You know, it's probably almost as much as swimming, really, if you really want to break it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. If you're a lunchtime runner going out and throwing down whatever, 30 to 60 minute tempo run 3 to 4 days a week, that is not how to get faster. You have to be able to pace yourself. You have to have the tracks, the hills, the aerobic workouts, the tempo workouts, the overspeed, short 20 to 30 second stuff. I mean, you have to have all that in a training plan. I recently picked up a marathoner who I'm coaching, and she was pretty fast. She was running about a 3 hour marathon, but that's what she was doing, was like anywhere from 12 to 14 mile tempo runs 3 to 4 times a week. And we changed up her program, and she came on 6 months ago, just threw down a 247 over in Chicago. So, you know, she's gained 13 minutes in half a year just by changing up the training plan and working on varying speeds throughout the week and not just one physiological system. So, I would definitely agree with Carrie on that pacing issue and running like a runner.
Cool. So, Ben, what about the swim and the bike? What do you recommend for speed?
Best way to get faster in the water is to get in the water more. You know, most people get on that 2 to 3 day a week scenario, but injecting, if you're not able to get in the water, like, you know, 5 days a week, then just inject a block into your training, like pick a 2 to 4 week span of time at some point during the year and like go to the pool almost every day because swimming is very neuromuscular. You need to get that feel for the water. And then for the bike, I would actually recommend if you really want to get faster on the bike and focus on doing it, throw down an indoor training session once a week in your plan, a focused interval indoor training session. And believe it or not, that can really make you faster because there's absolutely nothing to distract you, no barriers. You're able to focus very, very intensively on either the power or the heart rate. And, some of the fastest triathletes I coach work out a lot on the indoor trainer, whether that be the CompU trainer or just a regular indoor trainer with preferably some type of power meter attached to the bike.
Yeah, that's awesome. I completely agree on the swim, too. It's easier said than done as a coach. Get people in the water more than a couple times a week.
I agree with that too. Just like I get them in there as much as I possibly can. You know, if they can get in there every day, I get them. Even if it's like just for 10 minutes just to do drills, you know, I think it's worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, how about strength training and flexibility? Those are two things that are always tough to squeeze in when there's so many other things to do. What do you guys think about that in terms of triathletes and people that are training for all the different distances, and how do they incorporate it into their schedule?
Yeah, that's a good question. And there's a variety of ways you can do it. I mean, you can kind of throw it in as some drills before and when they work off, you know, or before they work out or after they work out too. You know, for instance, they can just do some lateral band walks before or after they run, just to kind of, you know, get the medial glutes, keep those strong, because those can often cause some problems if they're not strong. Also, you know, it's like before going swimming, you can do some shoulder work just to kind of warm things up, doing your YTWL kind of shoulder exercises in there. So that's one way if they're really pressed for time. But in general, I try to just give them a pretty quick set that's, you know, about 30 minutes that they can kind of do in a circuit type of form, you know, and what they do and the reps and sets and stuff like that will kind of change throughout the year as the race season goes on. But, you know, keeping it around 30 minutes max, and doing that 2 to 3 days a week, I think, is good. And it's good to, you know, just to keep the athlete nice and durable. It's also good just for building bone density and keeping you overall healthy too. It's going to do some things. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. And I'm sure Ben's got a lot more that he wants to see on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, starting off with the flexibility, I've used myself as a guinea pig. I've done yoga 3 times a week, hour-long classes, you know, in intensive advanced yoga flexibility stuff. And I've also done the whole kind of get up in the morning, do about 5 minutes of aerobics to get the muscles warm, and then do about 5 to 10 minutes of yoga. That latter protocol is what I'm doing now, and I'm just as flexible and injury-free as when I was doing longer flexibility sessions. So short sessions of flexibility thrown in on a consistent daily basis seems to be just as good as a few long, time-sucking flexibility sessions, you know, like going to a yoga class frequently. So especially when it comes to static stretching, as long as you're doing it consistently, you don't need to do that much of it. As far as the resistance training goes, this is going to kind of fly in the face of what I've written in my book, Top 12 Resistance Training Routines for Triathletes, mentioning bonuses in the academy. That is one of the bonuses in the academy. But basically, that program is designed as very super efficient 20 to 40 minute circuits that get you in and out of the gym and keep you in super triathlon shape. And I've been doing a lot of research in the past year and actually just sent the completed manuscript off to my publisher of a brand new book on weight training for triathletes. And the philosophy that I came out with in that book is a little bit different than the sessions that I've designed in Top 12 Resistance Training Routines. The sessions in the Top 12 book will keep you super fit. They will get you ripped. They'll give you a nice body. But when it comes to mechanical economy and efficiency for specifically cycling and running, they're not the best thing that you could be doing. Whereas the best thing that you could be doing is periodized throughout the year, and it gets a lot more complex than this, and that's why I had to write a whole book about it. But basically periodized throughout the year, anywhere from 1 to 4 sets in the lower 3 to 8 rep range with a lot more explosive lifting with heavier weights. We're talking like 75 to 90% of 1 rep max, basically lifting like a power lifter or an Olympic lifter, more than lifting in the traditional weightlifting sense. And there's a lot more to it than that, a lot of kind of dynamic stretching, foam rolling needs to be thrown in. Hopefully that book will get published and be available at major bookstores next year sometime.
You're going to outsell the 4-hour body?
No, I don't think I'll outsell the 4-hour body. Look for my book from Macmillan Publishing in about a year and a half to be outselling the 4-hour body. But that book is not yet. Well, it's a top secret project. Let's say that right now. But I did just order the 4-hour body today. So anyways, as far as the weight training goes, that's kind of the gist of where I stand right now. But ultimately, you know, until I put out that guide, 20 to 40 minute short, intense, squeeze a lot of stuff into a short period of time circuits are going to serve you just fine. If you want to kind of experiment with some powerlifting, with some Olympic lifting, and you know what you're doing, do so. But I would recommend that you wait until there's a guide out there to kind of help walk you through how to do that in triathlon to really implement that full bore.
Yeah, definitely. I actually just wanted to add some stuff on with the flexibility, which I didn't really address. I think a lot of the stuff that Ben was saying too, you know, the stack stretching, that's good. But again, I'm gonna harp on it again. The drills, doing running drills and things like that, and leg swings and things of that nature are huge for flexibility. In building what they call dynamic flexibility, which is kind of specific flexibility when you're actually doing the sport, because a static stretch isn't necessarily going to teach your body the coordination that it needs to make the flexibility happen in the given sports situation. So there's a lot of other things that need to happen on a neuromuscular level and coordination level for that to happen. And so, you know, doing running drills, high knees, high heels, Russians, leg swings, and just doing similar drills like that for the upper body for swimming as well are going to be all things that are going to help with the flexibility as well. So
awesome. Now, switching gears a little bit, losing weight, how do you guys see that in terms of somebody that's doing like an Ironman or a 70.3 triathlon that wants to lose weight? How do you see that incorporating like a weight loss plan into a training plan?
There's two studies I know of that exist on this. One study looked at a drop in caloric intake by up to 40% below normal intake values in cyclists, and found that doing that, and I'm blanking on whether it was 2 weeks or 4 weeks, but doing it for a short period of time to really kind of get the body cut and decrease fat prior to a hour-long laboratory time trial in cycling, actually had no deleterious effects on performance, with the caveat that that was a one-hour time trial. It was not an Ironman, so there was a lot lower risk for things like glycogen depletion or drop in hormonal training status compared to doing a longer event. So that was one study that I'm familiar with. The other one looked at and compared a group that decreased their body weight to improve their power to weight ratio, and compared that with a group that did intervals to decrease their power to weight ratio, or to increase their power to weight ratio, and then looked at a group that did both the interval training and the caloric restriction. And what happened with that study was that the group that did the interval training to improve their power to weight ratio actually outperformed the group that just fasted. But
yeah,
the group that did the interval training plus the fasting actually did poorer than both groups. So intense training and caloric restriction should not go hand in hand is basically kind of the fallout message from that study. The way that I generally preach to my athletes is you should focus on maintaining or decreasing weight in the off season, something a lot of people don't like to hear during this time of year with the holiday cookies in abundance, so that you don't have to be engaging in severe caloric restriction or moderate caloric restriction during your buildup to your event, which can really reduce your energy levels. However,
yeah,
if that's not doable, and say somebody comes to me for coaching and they sign up January 1st, and they're basically already fat from the holidays, and they've decided January 1st is going to be their go time, and they've got whatever, a July or an August triathlon, what we'll instead do is a combination of unfed and refeed days, where there will be unfed, long, slow cardio sessions where we know that it's really not going to impact hormonal status or training too significantly if they do that session in a completely unfed, glycogen-depleted state just to burn through fat stores. And we combine that with carbohydrate refeeding days on more intense interval training days. And then if they're doing like a low caloric intake 5 days a week, we'll have particularly the weekend days be the higher caloric intake, slightly higher carbohydrate percentage refeed days, and that tends to cause a nice decrease in weight without really affecting performance or energy levels too significantly.
Yeah, those are all different things that you can do with that. I mean, the main thing I do with the people that want to lose weight is I tell them, okay, we're going to lose a pound a week, and basically hold them to it. Basically make them accountable, and they basically shoot me a picture of them on their scale with the number once a week. And if they don't hit it, then hey, they get to do something. They get to pay me $100 or send it to a charity or whatever. They get it done. Don't go super crazy. I like Ben says, I get my people to do it in the off season if they can, or if they want to do it if I can't. But other than that, do it like that. Just make sure that their protein intake gets a little higher during that time as well, just to kind of avoid burning off, you know, because basically you're going to start you can start burning muscle if you get too protein depleted with what you're, you know, when you're actually training and things like that. So that's basically what I do with that. I don't go too crazy. In general, if they just eat a little bit healthier and they tweak a few things and they do the training, it usually comes off pretty easy anyway. You know, in general, I find that the people that say, oh, I can't lose it, I can't lose it, if you have them keep a food diary and you just tell them to, you know, cut out a few little things here and there, they're usually pretty good to go. So, and of course, doing the accountability thing that I do with them weighing in every week, and they get to lose a pound or they get to pay me, that works like a charm. So that's how I get it done with my people.
That's a good point that Kerry brought up with the protein, because this is a cool trick that you can do if you're trying to lose weight. You can go out and do like an unfed session or a series of unfed cardio sessions on a regular basis. And as long as you keep your amino acid levels elevated, you experience less lean muscle breakdown and less markers of inflammatory damage than if you just exercise starved with nothing coming in. So what you can do is get your hands on like the Bioletics amino acids or like the Master Amino Pattern or any of these whole amino acid sources, and then supplement with that in like a starved exercise state. And you can actually strip fat off and do less damage to your body than if you did that with low amino acid levels.
Yeah, that's great stuff. Now, I asked Kerry earlier, but I don't think I asked you, Ben. What would you say is the funnest part of both competing and coaching in triathlon?
The funnest part about coaching is easy. I mean, just because you can see the smiles on people's faces and read their race reports and basically just see people get better and see them love that and see their, you know, a lot of times I'll get thank you letters from people's husbands or wives talking about how, you know, I changed the family's nutrition or, you know, their spouse is feeling and looking so much better. I mean, just getting the feedback from people, that's the best part about coaching. As far as training, if peeing in my wetsuit doesn't count as something fun to do, I would have to say that I just eat up racing. Like, I'm highly, highly competitive. I played a high school and collegiate tennis. That was my main sport, and I hung out with a lot of, like, European tennis players, and maybe that's where I derived my passionate competitive nature. But I get very competitive during a race, and, like, I feed off of competition. Even if it means getting my butt kicked, I just love to compete. And so for me, that's the funnest part about triathlon is getting to compete, you know, in a venue that's hard to find. You know, it's tough to be able and find that in other sports like, you know, basketball or soccer or whatever, you know, be able to find that many people to compete against at once in that environment. I just get a kick out of it.
Awesome. Cool. Well, our hour is almost up. You guys, that was awesome. I really learned a ton, and I think that was a great time for our members, especially this time of year. And the Rockstar Academy again will be opening tonight. Did you say it was tonight at midnight?
If I made any mistakes and people are listening to this at like 11 p.m., they might be able to get in, but it's going to be open. No need to hurry. We're not limiting this one. It's open for the next 15 days until January 1st. You can get in for $1 for 2 weeks to check everything out. If you decide you like it, you want to stay in and get access to all this advice 24/7, then basically it's $37 a month, so a little over $1 a day.
Awesome. So, and the website is getrockstartry.com. So if anyone that's listening wants to sign up, just go to that website, getrockstartry.com. So I think that about wraps it up. So thanks again, guys. It was awesome. I'm sure we'll be in touch and have you guys back again.
Yeah, thanks a million for having us on, Kevin.
Yeah, good talking to you guys again.
Thanks, likewise, Kevin.
All right, so again, if you like that call, just go to rockstartriathlete.com, or if you'd like to take advantage of that special, visit email rockstar@rockstartriathlete.com. That's rockstar@rockstartriathlete.com. And although the special that you may have heard in this recording could have expired by the time you hear the recording, I will still honor anything that I mention in that call, including the bonuses and getting into the academy for $1. So just email me, Ben Greenfield, rockstar@rockstartriathlete.com, and I will hook you up. Have a great day.